From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Happy Valentine's Day to all of you. And later tonight, a walk on the paranormal side. Here's what's happening. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said he will activate rarely used emergency powers in an effort to end protests that have shut down some border crossings and paralyzed parts of the capital. Frustration has grown with what the critics see as permissive approach by police to the demonstrations in the border city of Windsor, Ontario, and in Ottawa, the nation's capital, where protests are entering the third week. The truckers are protesting vaccine mandates. Drop the mandates. The COVID-19 pandemic has worsened the anxiety of people all over the world, but a newly published Canadian study finds that the risk factors linked to anxiety disorders have differed between men and women. According to the study conducted at the University of Toronto, around 1 in 7 Canadians experienced generalized anxiety disorder during the early stages of the pandemic, but anxiety in men was more likely to be driven by exposure to COVID-19 misinformation, whereas anxiety in women was pushed by issues like unstable employment and things like that. If Russia invades the Ukraine, global stock markets could be in for a rough ride, much worse than most other geopolitical events of the past decades. A Russian invasion of Ukraine could further disrupt supplies of crude, potentially leading prices that are already their highest in 7 years and approaching $100 a barrel already to even loftier levels. And as the military standoff between Russia and the West intensifies along Ukraine's borders, a separate clash is unfolding on social media, where researchers say pro-Russian actors are flooding sites with messages portraying Western forces as aggressors. These influence operations are designed to deflect the intent of the military buildup around the Ukraine and preemptively justify a military offensive, according to Graham Bookie, the senior director of Atlanta Council's Digital Forensic Research Laboratory. Lauren Weinstein with us. He's got a little hoarseness, but we're going to get his reaction to this. What about these actors, Lauren?
So the idea, of course, is to confuse information so much that people begin doubting the facts that they can see themselves on the ground, claiming that people aren't who they actually are, the troops from one side are actually from the other side, on and on. Now, back in 2014, when Russia was in an annexing mood, they used a network of third-party bots and apps, often in third countries, to push out false propaganda about what was going on, to push out misinformation. This time, though, the propaganda regarding Ukraine is coming pretty much straight from pro-Russian actors and state media. So they're largely running the influence campaigns in public view this time. This makes it much harder for media to flag Russian misinformation about the Ukrainian situation. In essence, they're just lying in full view about the situation. And when you have Russian officials, sometimes very high Russian officials, making the statements, it gets very complicated for the media to call them outright liars, as opposed to the troll farms that the Russians used to use, where making those kinds of accusations was a much simpler proposition.
Can we assume, Lauren, that we are doing the same thing?
It's hard to say. In this case, though, it appears that the facts on the ground seem pretty clear. I mean, we know that the Russians have been, for months, have been building up.
Oh, and they still are.
Yeah. Troops on the border. There's just no way to get out from under that. So you don't really need propaganda to make that clear that's going on. The question is, you know, Russia has been attempting through their misinformation now to sort of refocus this on Ukraine and trying to say, well, this is Ukraine's fault, or you know, it's very confusing because on one hand, They're making statements saying that, well, you know, we've been forced into this situation by NATO and by talk of Ukraine joining NATO perhaps someday. On the other hand, Russia keeps saying that these are just, troop exercises. So it probably can't be both, but we certainly will find out.
All right, my friend, take care of that voice. A recent study reveals an area of the brain involved in regulating feeding behavior is impacted when there is chronic presence of pain. The findings might explain why people with chronic pain experience weight problems. Scientists say the neurons involved in communicating a person's motivation and pleasure are affected when someone experiences pain. A major storm tracking across the United States will bring severe thunderstorms, heavy snow, flooding rain, high winds this week as it moves from the west into the plains, the Midwest, the south, and the east. Get ready for that. Irritated scientists at NASA said they are worried that Elon Musk may be launching too many satellites. The billionaire owner of carmaker Tesla and space exploration company SpaceX plans to deploy another 30,000 satellites for his Starlink satellite project, which would give broadband interest access to most people on the planet. He lost 40 satellites last week, though, during a solar storm. In a moment, Dr. Sky will be talking about that issue. What else do you have for us this week, Dr. Sky?
Well, George, we're jam-packed here with information. We begin with astronomy and talking about this massive solar flare that hit the Earth 9,800 years ago. And with sunspot cycle, George 25, growing in strength, the world awaits what this cycle will be doing and bring us with regard to flares and CMEs. But nobody really knows for sure. But the great 1859 Carrington event and the 1921 railroad solar storm were massive enough. Scientists now tell us of evidence from ice cores of a massive, the mother of all solar storms, which hit the Earth some 9,800 years ago. That was around 7176 BC, producing massive amounts of protons called solar energetic particles. And the amazing part of this event, George, is that this occurred not at a solar max, but at a period of low solar activity. So the mystery of the sun continues to amaze us on a daily basis. We talk about space and talk a little bit about what you were talking about with more information. Starlink satellites hit by a solar storm. The launch of SpaceX's 49 Starlink satellites on February the 3rd ran right into a solar storm and increased atmospheric drag right on this group of satellites, forcing SpaceX to deorbit 40 of these 575-pound communication satellites. As the solar storm evolved, it created more drag on the lower atmosphere, preventing the satellites from reaching a useful orbit. And it continues on about what's happening, as you mentioned before, with Elon Musk. NASA's very concerned, as you mentioned, about the number of Starlink satellites. They've expressed serious concerns regarding the Gen 2 Starlink program and launches. He's concerned with dealing possible, that is, with satellite collisions in space due to satellites on the launch path when satellites, of course, are launched on rockets. And the growing problem, George, of telescopes' images being photobombed by too many satellites in space, obviously getting very crowded. We always wrap it up with the live sky, things that people can see. So mid-February brings us the full snow moon on the 16th, riding in the beautiful zodiac constellation of Leo the Lion, now marking only some 34 days till spring. Can't wait. This is the great time to explore the winter constellation of Orion. Easy to see. Look high in the south at 9 p.m. from most of North America. George, the two bright stars there are the red-orange supergiant star we know as Betelgeuse. And then to the lower right, the blazing blue supergiant star Rigel. And in between those two stars, and just below Orion's belt, you'll get to see the amazing Orion Nebula, even in a pair of binoculars. We did it the other night, even with a near full moon. Interesting enough. For planets, George, the show is in the morning sky, with blazing Venus, Mars, and the planet Mercury filling your pre-dawn skies this week. Emails, we love them, always at drskyshow@gmail.com. The website, of course, theskylive.com for great information. We always remind everybody, always remember what? Keep your eyes to the skies. And I'm simply your navigator on the highway to the heavens. Thank you, George.
Thank you, Dr. Sky. You make looking into the sky fun. In a moment, Mike Bira joins us, author of Ancient Aliens and JFK, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. Mike Bira back with us, New York Times bestselling author, lecturer, television personality, Ancient Aliens, whose books have sold more than 70,000 copies worldwide. He began his writing career after spending more than 25 years as an engineering designer and consultant for major aerospace companies, where he was a card-carrying member of the military-industrial complex. Michael, welcome back.
George, it's great to be back with you. And by the way, it's pretty close, if not over 100,000 copies now. I got to update that bio.
You keep selling. My gosh.
Well, I'm pretty proud of that. I mean, you know, not very many writers ever get to 15 or 20,000, much less 100,000. 20,000 is a big hit, so I'm pretty pleased with that.
Good
of course,
for
most
you.
Of them are dark mission, you know, the first one, but a lot of sales. So I'm really happy about that.
Great. What's new with you these days?
Well, not a lot. I mean, I'm, you know, doing some daily shows on, well, they're not on YouTube for very long. I take them down, but I do a daily live stream show, you know, called Real News Live, and I do Saturday Night Live with people like Brooks Agnew and stuff, and we just talk about the issues of the day and what's going on, because, you know, the alien thing is a little, seems like it's pretty quiet right now. I think the aliens are kind of sitting back and waiting to see what's going to happen. You know, is there going to be a war in Russia, or is it going to be a fake war? And, you know, all this other stuff that's going on seems like they're pretty quiet. So I haven't had a lot of alien stuff to talk about lately.
You know, we had a whole bunch 6 months, 7 months ago, but you're right. It's slowed down a little bit.
Yeah, it's just very quiet out there. And you know, people are like, well, why don't you talk more about aliens? And I'm like, well, why don't they do something? You know, it turns out a lot of sightings lately are meteors, or there's Starlink. You know, Starlink is getting mistaken for UFOs on a fairly regular basis. And, you know, people are now starting to see a lot more rocket launches, because there's so many rocket launches now with SpaceX and Blue Origin and all that stuff going on now. It's pretty exciting stuff for the conventional space program, but there's a lot of mistaken UFO sightings out there. And by the way, I refuse to call them UAPs, because that's the government term, and I'm never using that ever again.
I don't like that either. UFO sounds better, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And anytime the government and the media conspire to change our language, what the phrases we use, it's usually a bad thing. So I think there's some secret agenda. Hidden agenda, maybe. Didn't somebody write a book named Hidden Agenda?
Uh-huh.
Somebody did.
About
there's some hidden agenda to it, and I don't like it, and I'm not doing it. So,
Mike,
I don't think anybody else should either.
Lots to talk with you about tonight, but let's start with this moon landing and this apparent hoax, which I don't believe. We went to the moon. I know astronauts. You've known astronauts. What's your take on this?
Well, absolutely, we went to the moon, and most of the series are just, they're just so silly. I mean, all these things that people talk about and mention, and I don't want to go into a whole litany of them, but stuff about the photography, they get that all wrong. About the physics, they get that all wrong. The radiation, they get that stuff all wrong. And it's really, to me, it's a problem, because I think the main theme of all the things we're going to talk about tonight is that, to my mind, they are distractions from the real conspiracy. The real conspiracy about the moon is the fact is, like, what were the motivations for really going, which relates to President Kennedy, and what did we really do when we were there? So I feel like they introduced this fake moon hoax theory, which, by the way, George, got its start before Apollo 11 had even splashed down from the first lunar landing back in 1969 at NASA JPL. By NASA. They were the ones who started this rumor, and I think they started it to create this cultural meme that got everybody, when you think about the moon and you think about conspiracies, you're thinking about, oh, well, they faked going there. You know, they filmed it all in a studio in Nevada in Area 51 or something, as opposed to the real conspiracy, which is, why did we really go? What did we find when we were there? And more importantly, what did we bring back, and how has that been exploited over the last 50, 60 years?
And why didn't we go back, assuming we did not, huh?
Exactly.
And exactly. I remember the moon project, and during the landings, there was simulation. I remember Walter Cronkite saying, let's go to our studios, and you could see astronauts on a phony moon setting.
Yeah.
Is that one of the things that confused people?
Yeah, it is. It is. And they say, oh, look, this is completely phony. It's not really a moon set. And, you know, in terms of this part of it, I went to a museum in New York as part of a TV show I did in 2019. And we actually, there was one of the lunar modules that did not go. They were scheduled like for three more missions, 18, 19, and 20. They actually built a couple of the lunar modules, and they had, you know, they had this one lunar module, I think it was for Apollo 18, that was sitting there on a set, and literally, you know, standing there, you would believe you were on the moon. It's that realistic. The issue, though, is that they did these simulations, and then people think, oh, well, that's obviously fake, so that must be not real. But, I mean, it's really easy to tell that it's actors on a soundstage. For one thing, that the suits are never pressurized because a pressurized spacesuit, you know, is really stiff and they look like, you know, the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man bouncing around on the moon there. And you can't do that on Earth with these spacesuits because it's too expensive to have a real pressurized spacesuit. And it's pretty obvious that they're not pressurized. So that's one thing that I think gives it away.
I mean, I always thought they looked like the Michelin Men.
Yeah, they did when they were on the moon bouncing around.
Yeah, and, all puffed
up. Jumping higher than Michael Jordan could jump with a 40-pound pack on your back or whatever it was. It was pretty interesting stuff.
I ran into Shaquille O'Neal this weekend. He's tall.
Yeah, he's big.
Whoa, he's tall.
Wow, that's amazing. I've never met Shaq, but I have stood next to the statue of him that used to be down there at the Staples Center, and that is a big human. That's proof of Anunnaki blood in the human genome, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. Now, didn't Stanley Kubrick do some kind of filming on a soundstage?
Yeah, he did. And to me, you know, this is one of the most ridiculous theories that's out there, which is that Stanley Kubrick secretly filmed the moon landings using 1960s technology to produce the films that we all saw, the video that we all saw coming in basically live, you know, delayed by a few seconds from the lunar surface.
Right. The grainy black and white stuff.
The grainy black and white stuff and the color stuff. And remember, it got progressively better, George, because they kept sending better cameras to the moon and better video cameras.
Sure.
So it kept getting better. I think once they were comfortable that we couldn't see any of the artificial structures in the background with the cameras they were using, they got braver and they started sending better cameras. But you know, it's just nonsense. I was on this show for the Science Channel called Truth Behind the Moon Landing. And one of the things we did is we went and interviewed his personal assistant. His personal assistant was a guy named Leon Vitali, who actually was an actor. Kubrick made a very famous period piece in 1975 called Barry Lyndon, and he starred as Lord Bullington in the film.
Uh-huh.
And he had such an incredible experience with Kubrick that he basically gave up his Academy Award-nominated acting career to be Kubrick's personal assistant. And we sat down and we grilled him, and he just said, no, it's all nonsense. Kubrick was a fan of space travel and space exploration. That's why he put, you know, a kid in an Apollo 11 sweater in The Shining and things like that. And then the whole rest of it, which is that supposedly that he used front screen projection to create the lunar video footage, is just ridiculous. I mean, and they used really super low resolution images to claim, oh, see this line right here? That's the edge of the set, and behind that is the projection screen. And then you go and you pull up the exact same frame in high resolution, and there's no line there, there's no set there. And, you know, it's just a matter of how the photographic cameras were set up. They had various different settings for close-up stuff, medium range, and long distance. And it's just really ridiculous. And that's the one that really gets under my skin the most, because it's just so silly.
Mike, next half hour, I want to talk about JFK and aliens, but was there an ancient alien connection to the Apollo program?
Yeah, absolutely. And what it was is that, you know, that race we just talked about, the Anunnaki, that were here way back at the beginning of recorded time in history, they were on the moon. I mean, they absolutely were there. They built structures. They built buildings. And they left behind a lot of equipment and a lot of technology. And that is the secret reason why we wanted to go to the moon in the first place and why we had to beat the Russians there, because, you know, we were going to be the first that were going to go back, get that stuff, bring it back to Earth, and then reverse engineer it. And that was the whole purpose of the Apollo program.
Why do you think the Russians simply stopped the Soviets at the time?
Well,
I mean, they were going great guns. They beat us with Sputnik. They were ahead of us for a while. Then we just took over, and they stopped.
They did stop, and part of it was that we had jumped ahead of them. I mean, von Braun had figured out some very important stuff about how to navigate in space because, you know, the physics that we all thought was the real physics turned out to be not quite the complete picture, and he did some experiments and noticed some things and figured out how to navigate to the moon and how we could get safely back. And so we jumped way ahead of the Russians because we figured this out ahead of them. They were having real difficulty navigating and getting to the moon. You know, the first time the Russians tried to basically hit the moon with a satellite, they missed it by 38,000 miles.
Jeez.
And that's 17 times the diameter of the moon itself. So, you know, there were a lot of navigational problems, which we figured out first. We jumped ahead. And then President Kennedy, three times, made the offer to Nikita Khrushchev, let's go to the moon together. Let's not fight. Let's not get into a conflict over this. Let's join together and share the discoveries that we make on the moon. And, of course, that's actually, in my opinion, what got President Kennedy killed.
Let's talk about that next, Mike, when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you along with Mike Barra. Mike, right before the break, you kind of dropped the bombshell here talking about Kennedy and his assassination. He was trying to negotiate with Khrushchev to do a joint mission to the moon, wasn't he?
Yeah, he absolutely was. And according to Khrushchev's own son, Sergei, who was a senior fellow at Brown University for a long time, he said his father had accepted it. And he went on a walk with his father. He said late October, early November 1963. And Nikita Khrushchev told him that, I think we have to accept this deal, you know, before we need to, because like you said, George, we the Soviet Union, were ahead in the space race, but now we're behind, and I don't think we're going to be able to catch up to the Americans. And I think we better take the deal. And he told Sergei this, and then it turns out, like, less than, I don't know, about 8 or 9, 10 days later, Kennedy issues these two National Security Action Memos, which you can get in my book, you know, Ancient Aliens and JFK. I actually show you the documents, and one of them says to Director CIA, hey, get an office set up so that we can start exchanging information with the Russians on the differences between our secret projects and bona fide UFOs, basically is what he says, bona fide alien spacecraft, so that they know the difference, so we won't start a war. And then he directs the James Webb, the director of NASA, to go ahead and open up an office to begin exchanging technological information with the Russians. And that the date of that was November 12th, 1963, which is exactly 10 days before they blew Kennedy's head off in Dealey Plaza in Dallas, Texas. So I'm not saying that was the reason, but it's pretty clear, George, that's the reason. And there's also another document called the Byrne Memo, where it talks about, look, he's asking questions that we don't want him to be asking and we aren't going to answer. So we have to consider whether we might need to take further action. And there's just no question that Majestic 12, MJ-12, the early precursor to the deep state that we have now, decided that that was it. They were not going to do it because they all knew, George. They knew that there was ancient extraterrestrial alien technology on the moon, and Kennedy was not only going to let the Russians see it and touch it, he was going to let them have some of it. And that was absolutely unacceptable to the people inside the deep state, the Majestic 12, the CIA, Allen Dulles, people like that. They just were not going to tolerate that. And that, I believe, is what set into motion the events that took place 10 days later in Dallas.
Tragic, tragic. Ingo Swann, the late remote viewer, said that he remote viewed the backside of the moon and saw a lot of that technology.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, the thing is, again, I can show you pictures taken from the lunar surface that, by the way, everybody are from the lunar surface. And there are things that at first look like rocks. And when you start zooming up at them and looking at them, they're clearly pieces of technology strewn all over the lunar surface. I mean, there's this big, giant sort of robot head looking thing in Shorty Crater. There's other instruments all over the place. So I think it would be very easy for the astronauts to have picked some of this stuff up, brought it home, and that to have been studied and reverse engineered. And also, don't forget, there's another document out there that came out, gosh, just a couple years ago, right before the book got published back in 2018. And it was a WikiLeaks document that said that not only was there a secret American base on the backside of the moon, the dark side of the moon, but it says that the Russians nuked it with a nuclear weapon in 1979. Now, all we have is the metadata for this document. I know some other people have been trying to get a hold of it now for 2 or 3 years, the actual document. But this is a real U.S. government DOD document that supposedly describes how a secret American military base on the dark side of the moon, for one of a better, it just sounds better than backside of the moon. Let's call it dark side.
And was it manned at the time?
Apparently it was. That's how close we came to some sort of nuclear war, probably back in 1979. So it's an incredible document. It really exists. I've gone through, I've looked at the metadata, I've looked at where it is. The problem is we just can't get the government to give us the documents so we can read what it actually says. All we've got is the headline, basically.
Yeah, they've still held back on a lot of Kennedy documents, Mike.
Yeah, they have. I mean, there's still, I think, well, we just got some more released that were, you know, President Trump released a whole bunch of them, and some of the documents that were in there are what motivated me to write the Ancient Aliens and JFK book, because one of them says, for instance, you know, I had always targeted two people as the assassins, Lee Harvey Oswald in the school book depository sixth floor window, and J.D. Tippit on the grassy knoll, and it says right in there in one of the documents, one of the FBI documents, it says, you know, we have a witness that saw Police Officer Tippit and Lee Harvey Oswald together a week before the assassination. Guess where they were, George? Jack Ruby's bar or club or whatever you want to call it.
How bizarre. Yeah.
So Ruby and Oswald and Tippit were all together. And here's the thing. After the assassination, Lee Harvey Oswald, he was never charged with the murder of President Kennedy. He was charged with the murder of a Dallas police officer that he shot dead 30 minutes after the Kennedy assassination.
In a movie theater.
Well, just outside a movie theater.
Where he was hiding.
Right, was J.D. Tippit.
That's right.
So if you look at it like this, these three guys meet, they're planning the assassination. Oswald and Tippit kill Kennedy. Oswald kills Tippit, has orders to kill Tippit. He kills him. Ruby kills Oswald. Jack Ruby becomes a single point failure, and he never talked.
Far out theory, Michael, but there had to have been others involved.
Yep, there definitely were others involved. In fact, there's a picture that's actually in the book, and it's up on the site right now. It's up on, well, we've got a bunch of the pictures on the Coast to Coast website there. There's a picture of the limousine, and this is a photograph that was taken just after President Kennedy had been shot for the first time, but before the fatal shot from the grassy knoll. And it shows not only the Kennedy limo, but the following Secret Service limo, and then behind that is Lyndon Johnson's limo. And if you look at this picture, you can see Senator Yarborough from Texas. In the middle seat is Lady Bird Johnson, who would, you know, later become the First Lady. And in the seat next to them is supposed to be Vice President Lyndon Johnson. We've got pictures of him in that seat. He's not there. You know why? Because he knew as soon as they turned that corner, the shots were going to start firing. He was already ducking by the time the first shot had been fired, George.
So you're one of those believers that think LBJ was part of this.
Absolutely, he was part of it. And, you know, for him, it was probably just, oh, hey, you know, now I get to be president. I always wanted to be president. This, you know, SOB.
Well, plus he was concerned that Kennedy was going to knock him off the ticket when he ran for reelection.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know how plausible that was, because Kennedy was in a little bit of trouble in Texas, and LBJ, of course, was from Texas, which is why he got on the ticket in the first place. But I think what happened is that MJ-12, these people came to Johnson, and he helped arrange the whole thing, because all these guys have connections to organizations that Johnson was a part of. And, you know, Dealey Plaza, George, I've stood there on the grassy knoll where we had the picture of the so-called badge man, which is the guy in the Dallas police's office uniform that fired the rifle shot, the headshot, which I think we can prove six ways from Sunday came from the front, from the grassy knoll. And I'm not much of a marksman. I mean, I have some guns, but I'm not much of a rifleman. But I stood there, and with a car moving at 5 miles an hour, I'm pretty sure I could have made that shot. And I know an experienced, you know, rifleman definitely could have made the shot. And it's just so bizarre, because that event changed the course of history in more ways than we even know, because of the fact that Kennedy did not bring the United States and the Soviet Union together. And instead we had, 40 more years of the Cold War, 30 more years.
And we still have it.
And we still have it in a way, yeah. Again, they're trying to beat the drums of war into Ukraine right now. And, George, it's ridiculous. These areas of the Ukraine and the Baltic states and the Crimea, they're Russian. They speak Russian. They want to be part of Russia. This isn't an invasion. This has all been prearranged and agreed to by these two countries. But, you know, Ukraine has also been a place where a lot of very bad people have been laundering an awful lot of money for a very long time, ever since Ukraine became an independent state. It's very corrupted, and they're afraid they're going to lose their, you know, their meal ticket if that happens. So it's just I don't know. It's pretty crazy where we're at right now with the Russians.
Strange. The name of the book is Ancient Aliens and JFK. Let's also talk about your thoughts about the flat Earth theory. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I've been watching a lot of flat Earth videos lately because they're kind of interesting in some ways. I mean, if you look,
they're like, well done. It's bizarre, but it's well done.
Well, it's bizarre that anybody could believe it, but basically, George, there's this group of people that some of whom were kind of intelligent that think
them are intelligent, Michael.
Yeah, I know. That's the scary part. That the Earth is not a sphere, but that it's this sort of flat plate that's like floating in the ether in the middle of nothing, like a giant snow globe with a dome over it, which they call the firmament. And that Antarctica is actually an ice wall that stretches all around the outside edge. And there's all these thoughts, all these reasons why they think the Earth is flat. And most of them, of course, like the moon hoax theory, are pretty easy to take apart. They're pretty easy to say, oh, well, that's not really, why. That's not really true. Or, like one of them is that, oh, if you look at the horizon, it doesn't curve. Well, the curvature of the Earth, the Earth is 7,000 miles across, give or take, 9,000 miles across. And it's like that curvature is very subtle unless you're very high up.
That's right.
And all you have to do is sit on the ocean. I used to live down there in Redondo Beach on the Esplanade. And, I used to watch boats and ships go out away from the ocean, and they would disappear. The bottom of the ship disappears first, and the mast and the,
They fell over the edge. Back. You know that.
They fell over the edge, right, because the Earth is curving, and they're simply disappearing beyond the horizon. So it's just bizarre.
What makes these people legitimately think that the Earth is flat? I mean, they're serious. They're not joking.
It's the same thing that makes people think that the moon landings were faked. It's the same thing that makes people buy into all these nutty conspiracy theories about JFK when I think the truth is right in front of them. It's that they see the secrecy and they see the cover-up, but they assign it to the wrong thing. And I really think that the flat Earth theory is going to replace or is replacing the moon hoax theory as the new meme. In other words, they don't want people to really look into all the things that NASA has lied about. So they give them this fake, easily discreditable conspiracy theory that the Earth is really flat, that it's not a sphere, and that's the thing that people grab onto. So I think, again, I think our culture is being manipulated, like it was with the fake moon landing stuff, with this new flat Earth theory, to get people that like, oh, well, then why are they lying about this and why are they lying about that? Well, there's a lot of reasons, as we talked about on this show many times, why NASA would lie about stuff that's on the moon and on Mars, and why NASA lies about a whole bunch of things. But I think one of the things they didn't lie about absolutely is whether or not the Earth is a sphere or whether it's a flat plate snow globe floating through the nothingness.
If you were a flat earther, if you were, you're not, but if you were, how would you convince us that the Earth was flat?
Well, I think the best argument, which stood up for a little while before I actually investigated it, is if you take the Earth and you flatten it out. You take the flat Earth map, like the UN map. The Earth looks flat on the UN map, and they say, "Oh, that's proof the Earth is really flat." And you look at like the way air routes are run. You see people flying from like Sydney to Dubai, and then down to South America, let's say to Brazil or something. And you go up, and then you go down. But if you take the Earth and you take the map and you flatten it out, it's actually a straight line between Sydney and Dubai and Brazil, as opposed to this bizarre, seemingly going out of your way, for 18-hour, 10-hour, 15-hour flights and thousands of miles out of the way. So that one got me thinking a little bit at first, but then I started looking at different airlines. They made claims like, well, there are no flights from South America to Australia and New Zealand. There's no direct flights. You have to go up through the Arab Middle East and then down to Australia and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, that's not really true. And I went and looked at different airlines, and it isn't true. They do fly across that distance, but it's because the Pacific Ocean is so vast, George. I mean, people don't realize this. If you approach the Earth from, let's say, the center of the Pacific Ocean, you wouldn't see any land masses except maybe Antarctica because it's so huge. And with airplanes, you always want waypoints. I mean, if you look at different courses and flight routes, they fly a lot of times in a parabolic course, which is because the Earth, guess what, is curved, and that's actually the shortest distance between two points, but they also have to have waypoints. Commercial jetliners always like to have you never farther away than 2 hours from an airport you could land at because of medical emergencies possibly on board and simply for safety.
And, you've got technical issues, too.
Yeah, you got these planes. You know, they only have two engines now, most of them, which actually freaks me out a little bit. I don't like that. How would you like to be on a 12-hour flight from Santiago, Chile to New Zealand with two engines, and halfway through, one of them goes out?
They're big engines, but no, I wouldn't.
Yeah, that's no fun. So there are, you know, there are logical reasons why these flight paths are taken and why these routes are taken. And it's like they just jump on that and say, oh, look, that proves the Earth is flat because you would fly in a straight line. Well, you know, I could fly in a straight line from Seattle to New York, and it would take me 5 or 6 hours, and then it would take me another 7 hours to get to Manchester, England. So you're talking, what, 12 hours? Or I could just take a parabolic course from Seattle to London, and it's about a 9-hour flight if I go up over the Arctic Circle.
What do you think of the hollow Earth theory?
Well, the hollow Earth theory, I think, is a lot stronger. I think because the fact is we know that there's caverns and things inside the crust of the Earth. We know that for a fact, and we've been into some of these places, and there's all kinds of crazy stories about things that people have seen down below. And I also, you know, some people tell me things, and I have a few people that I know that I trust that give me information. I'm not one of these super connected guys who knows everything, but, you know, they tell me that there's two civilizations living inside the Earth, just like a lot of us crazy conspiracy theorists have talked about. They're non-human, and that they've been here for a long time, and they stay out of our way, and as long as we leave them alone, they'll leave us alone, kind of a situation. So, you know, there's that, and there's lots of people that have done some really interesting research into the hollow Earth thing. And, of course, there's all the great stories I talk about in Hidden Agenda, all the great stories about the Nazis going to Antarctica and finding, you know, submarine entrances with submarines that they took to the inner Earth.
Yeah, that's a great story. Mike, let's talk a little bit more about that and take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.